The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Welcome to Talking Health, and I'm your host, Lisa Platt. And today, we are visiting with our old friends from the Shaw Heart and Vascular Center, Connie Kinman, who's the director, Jean Brewer, who taught Connie everything, and Bill Ruick. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Well, guys, let's start with you, Bill, since you arrived here a little late. We're just going to start with you, pick on you just a tad bit. So I want you to share with us what you do at the Shaw Heart and Vascular Center, how you got to Roseburg, and how did you get to Mercy?
Okay, well, that's a lot. My career started many years ago. It'll actually be in March. It'll be 45 years I've been in the field. So I tell people that when I started in the field, I had some equipment that had vacuum tubes in them. And then we used oscilloscopes. So many people don't even know what those things are nowadays.
That would be me.
Yeah. Me too.
So you remember the old TV sets, you know, the big, those are basically oscilloscopes. Anyway, I trained and worked primarily in the cardiac cath lab, but I also did pulmonary function tests. Non-invasive testing of the heart was kind of in the early infancy stage. So I kind of really, when I started in the field, it was the beginning of the technology boom. And we transitioned from what we call the old analog equipment, like those pieces of equipment I was mentioning. It went to kind of a solid state stage where we had, you know, transistors and all of those kinds of equipment. And you can probably remember that from the evolution of your television sets was kind of parallels all of this. And then we transitioned from that into the digital phase, which was a rather painful phase, I must admit. In those days, the equipment had to be babied. It drifted. It had to be calibrated all the time. You had to quality control it and so forth. Then we got to the digital age, and the equipment, of course, expanded enormously in its capabilities. And it also became extremely reliable. So digital equipment is either on or off. It either works perfectly or basically it doesn't work at all. So this made my job a lot easier in terms of not having to focus so much on the equipment. We can focus on the patient, the diagnostic test, and the quality of care more so than we have to worry about, you know, equipment breaking down and having to chase after all of the equipment issues and so on. So at the I moved here to Roseburg about 30 years ago. I've been with Mercy at the Heart Center for 23 of those years now. My primary position now is a cardiac sonographer. That is, I do, and that's not stenographer, that's sonographer, which means sound, sono, sound. So we work with ultrasound. So ultrasonographers are people who do ultrasound studies. Echocardiography, cardiac sonography deals with ultrasound exams of the heart. And that's my primary responsibility, although I do work in stress testing and some of the heart monitoring areas. I used to, up until about 10 years ago, work in the cardiac catheterization lab, spend a large part of my career in the cardiac catheterization lab for both the diagnostic, and then when Dr. Feldman arrived, I got even more experienced in some of the therapeutic areas of the cardiac cath lab, which includes, you know, putting in devices, but more importantly, putting in stents to open up blockages in arteries. So it took more of a slant. When I first started in the 70s, it was purely diagnostic. Now it's very much oriented towards the therapeutic side. So that kind of summarizes where I've been and where I'm at now.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's nice to get to know you. I think this is the first time I've met you, too.
Yeah.
So, Jane, or Jean, now that Connie gave you this big introduction about you taught her everything, you got to live up to it now. So tell everybody about yourself.
Okay, well, I'll try. I came to the Heart Center about 30 years ago. At that time, it was diagnostic only catheterization lab, and I was the fourth person there. I grew up in this area, left home when I could fly, spent a lot of time in Portland and working in intensive care at Providence St. Vincent's. And now I came back to Roseburg in 1990, and I enjoy my job every day. I love to come to work. So at that time when I began, I learned every aspect of what we had to do in our department, including monitors, stress testing, and the cardiac cath lab. I did not at that time do echocardiograms, but I went back to school in 1999 to learn to do the echocardiograms as well. So my role in the Heart Center now, I'm an RN. I'm also an echocardiographer. But most importantly now, I'm a quality cardiovascular nurse, and I deal with our statistics and making sure that our documentation is correct for all of our procedures. When we see a patient for the first time, we're seeing them. They've already been in the doctor's clinic. So when a patient comes, we like to talk about what kind of symptoms they're having, whether it's with exercise or at rest, what kind of medications they're on, what they've tried to help with the symptoms, that kind of thing. The doctors already have given us information about what they're looking for when they come to the Heart Center. And we do anything from an EKG to the cardiac cath lab, plus the interventions that Bill was describing. We deal a lot with an expression called door to balloon time. And why we do this is that because a patient can come to our facility now, have a heart attack, we start the time on the clock when they enter the facility. And we're working towards getting that artery opened up within 90 minutes or less. So we're always striving to make that time as little as possible. And we deal with time as muscle. The longer the time goes without that artery, without that artery being opened, there is more muscle damage that can occur.
Well, Jean, you've got a big job, and I know part of your job is making sure that this very important person over here, Connie Kinman, the director, you make her look good. So, Connie, welcome back to the show, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
You know what? You are correct. That's everybody that works in a heart center makes me look good. They do an awesome job. And I think that we do have some of the most experienced staff that work in there, and their ability to recognize symptoms and changes in the patients immediately. So you're right. I enjoy my job, and this year it'll be 41 years as an RN and 25 in Shaw Heart Center. So you have all of us oldies sitting here giving you info.
I think that's amazing. Congratulations, you guys. That's almost 120 years or more between the three of you. Over the top.
That's the way I feel.
So, guys, let's talk a little bit about the Shaw Heart Center. Who makes up the team?
So the team is made up of RNs, like Bill was saying, echo techs. It's made up of special procedure radiology techs. We have EKG techs. We have, of course, the receptionist that checks everybody in and makes sure they get to the right person for the right test. So as Jean was saying, in 1990, when she first came back to Mercy, to the Shaw Heart Center, there were four employees. Now we're up to 32.
Wow, that's great. So, Jean, you were telling us a little bit. I want to go back and revisit when you see a patient for the first time. Are you seeing the patient in the clinic or in the hospital or both?
We're seeing them in our department, which can be outpatient or inpatient. And generally speaking, the physician has already visited with the patient and has given us testing that needs to occur.
Okay. Bill, maybe this one is for you, because I don't want the ladies to monopolize all of the time.
I mean, like I usually do.
I, I didn't say that, but I want to ask you, so when you are seeing somebody in the clinic or the hospital, how are heart issues usually found? Is it a blood test, or exactly how does it get diagnosed?
Right. It depends on the presentation. So we don't see people in the clinic. The clinic would be the Shaw Heart and Vascular Associates, which can kind of be confusing sometimes because we are the Shaw Heart and Vascular Center. So we're the hospital-based diagnostic and therapeutic arm of the program we have at Mercy for heart disease. But essentially, we'll see patients that may present in the hospital through the emergency room, the acute heart attack phase where we rush into the cath lab, that door-to-balloon time is important, all of that. So some patients will present that way. Other patients will present with less severe symptoms, but signs also of having a heart attack, what's commonly called an NSTEMI in medical terminology, which just means a heart attack instead of the full thickness of the heart wall, it's a partial thickness of the heart wall. It's a smaller heart attack. And oftentimes, if those symptoms can't be controlled well, then they're treated as if they were having a full heart attack. So they get rushed to the cath lab fairly quickly in that case. Other times, they stabilize the patient, let things cool down a little bit, and then they'll go in. But those patients are obviously having a heart attack. So they go directly to the invasive cardiac catheterization lab for diagnosis and treatment. Other patients might present with chest pain and have symptoms that are more intermittent and symptoms that are maybe a little bit more difficult to diagnose. We want to make sure, first of all, that they don't have a heart problem as opposed to it's their gallbladder or GERD or something like that, indigestion or whatever. So in those cases, they'll do some blood tests. There's a very sensitive blood test, which has really revolutionized the treatment of acute care for the heart, and it's called a troponin test. And it's an enzyme that when the heart muscle is damaged, leaks into the bloodstream. And there's an extremely sensitive test for that. In fact, it's almost oversensitive that will help categorize patients as to whether or not chest pain is significant. In those cases, the patient may then, if they have, they'll start with some other tests. They'll probably have an echocardiogram. If something is detected that shows some potential heart muscle damage or at least some heart muscle that's in jeopardy, then they may go directly to that invasive approach therapy. Otherwise, they may need further risk stratification or categorization where they may have to have some sort of a stress test. And then from that, they'll be determined whether or not they're at risk for heart disease or not. They'll go into that invasive strategy, or maybe they need to start looking at other things like the digestive system, the gallbladder, and so forth.
Okay, great. Well, I think we're going to take a short break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talking Health on Talk at 4, brought to you by CHI Mercy Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi, it's Lisa, and we are back with Talking Health presented by CHI Mercy Health. Hey, Kathleen, next week I think you invited some of your colleagues from the Rotary Club to stop by and visit with us. Is that right? Yes, Kathleen. Thank you. But today we're talking with the experts at the Shaw Heart Center, and that's Connie Kinman, Gene Brewer, and Bill Ruick. Thanks, guys, for coming back. Mm-hmm. So earlier, Gene, you talked about door to balloon. I want to revisit that to tell us specifically what that means and why it's so important.
Okay, well, door to balloon is from the time the patient enters the threshold of the hospital until intervention is done on a blocked
coronary artery. And we like to achieve that time within 90 minutes, and the less, the better for the patient. When we speak about time as muscle, we're determining the longer that the patient has no blood supply to that particular part of the muscle, that part of the muscle can die and no longer be contracting, or whatever you want to say, viable.
So, Bill, I know, because Connie's going to, she keeps looking at me, kind of pass it to Bill, pass it to Jean. So I get Connie. I've known her a long time now. So tell us about the success of the Shaw Heart Center. And what I mean by that is, how do you measure your outcomes for success?
Well, there's a couple of ways that we measure them. Jean is involved in that part of the Heart Center, but we have various quality measures that we're continually looking at, particularly on a quarterly basis. The hospital participates in a database that's submitted nationally, so we can compare ourselves to not just what our own goals are, but what the goals are nationally for heart care and heart outcomes. We've performed very well on those. We've also sought accreditation for our cardiac catheterization program and also for our echocardiography laboratory. So I believe that we were the first hospital west of the Mississippi that received accreditation for the cardiac catheterization lab from the Society for Cardiac Angiography and Intervention, which is a professional society that sets the standards for that kind of care nationwide and really internationally as well.
So we talk about these cath labs. What is a cath lab, and why are they so important?
A cardiac cath lab is, at the very basic, is a radiographic or an X-ray suite. So it uses an X-ray technique called fluoroscopy, and that's used for imaging. And fluoroscopy is used for medical imaging for lots of different things, but it's particularly good for positioning things. So in the cardiac catheterization lab, they're inserting wires and balloons and catheters and things that have to be very precisely positioned in the heart and in the blood vessels of the heart. So fluoroscopy is an X-ray technique. It's been around for a long time, and it's essential for that kind of positioning of devices and things. Nowadays, of course, everything is digitalized. And so we used to take 30 millimeter film of the cardiac catheterization procedures I think we converted to digital in about 1999 or around 2000. So we've been digital for a long time. We were maybe one of the first digital, fully digital labs in Oregon, actually. And of course, being digital now, you don't have to deal with all the X-ray chemicals and all the other stuff, but you get results immediately. You get good quality diagnostic results, and they can be reviewed over and over and over again to look at the outcomes as the procedure is progressing, to decide and make decisions about what needs to come next. And if there's any complications or problems, then you can deal with those very quickly and directly in the cardiac catheterization laboratory. So that's the heart of it, is really this X-ray and imaging system. Also, there is physiologic monitoring for the safety of the patient, where we monitor their electrocardiogram, their blood pressure, their oxygen saturation, other kinds of sophisticated measures to see how the patient is doing. But also some of those measurements of the pressures inside of the heart are also important for diagnostic reasons. So we can sometimes just do a diagnostic procedure still. Occasionally we do those to just measure the blood pressures in the lungs, for instance, to check for something called pulmonary hypertension, where it's like hypertension in your lungs versus the hypertension that most people have, which is in the blood vessels of your body. So that's essentially what the laboratory is. It's stocked with all kinds of different devices and things. In addition to that, we also use the laboratories for device implants such as pacemakers and defibrillators. And then they're also used. We have a new service that we're offering now, which is interventional radiology. And I don't know if we've had a chance to touch on that much. But interventional radiologists put in all kinds of different sorts of devices, access catheters and things, and treatments and so forth that are oriented towards things other than cardiac things.
So while you have the microphone there, tell us the difference between a defibrillator and a pacemaker.
A pacemaker really substitutes for the natural pacemaker of the heart. Everybody's heart has a natural pacemaker. It fires off at about 70 beats per minute, and there is a kind of a specialized electrical conduction system in the heart. And oftentimes with age and with disease, that electrical system becomes disrupted. And when it becomes disrupted, it's necessary to then stimulate the heart externally, and that's what a pacemaker device does. So a pacemaker consists of a unit that has the brains in it that controls precisely the activation sequence for the heart and has a battery in it also. And these batteries are usually lithium batteries. They last typically anywhere from about 5 to 12 years, depending upon how much the device is used and what the device is for. A defibrillator potentially can use up a lot more energy than a pacemaker. So, and then there's lead wires. The lead wires then connect to the heart, and they're typically on the side of the heart that pumps to the lungs, which is the low-pressure side of the heart. And so the wires are threaded through a vein, and then they're lodged in various areas of the heart, usually one in the upper chamber and one of the lower chambers on the right side of the heart. And that's how the sequence is stimulated sort of naturally. So the upper part of the heart is stimulated first, and then there is a slight delay, and then the lower part is. And then what happens with the stimulation is that there's a contraction occurs in the upper and then the lower chamber, and it coordinates the contraction in what we call a physiologic or more of a normal sequence so that the patient gets the advantages of sort of a normal activation of their heart. Now, a defibrillator is something that also works as a pacemaker. It can work as a dual or single chamber pacemaker, but it also will sense a lethal arrhythmia where somebody is impending cardiac arrest, basically. And it will either overdrive that lethal rhythm of the heart by pacing really rapidly and then shutting it off and resetting the heart that way. Or if that doesn't work, then it will actually defibrillate the heart, kind of like, you know, you see on these paramedic shows or whatever where they use a really large voltage. It takes a much smaller voltage in heart, and it's a life-saving device, and it's not used very often. So when a patient needs one of these devices, they're getting heart failure treatment typically, and they're getting treatment to suppress those lethal cardiac rhythms that, you know, that can kill a person. And when there's breakthrough, then that will treat those. It's a safety net. And a pacemaker is a safety. Although with pacemakers, as you get older, your heart tends to be lazy, and it tends to work all the time after a while. It tends to work more and more as you get older. We have patients that are on their third and fourth pacemaker device, and including their defibrillator on their third and fourth one.
Wow, this is fascinating. So thank you, Bill. You've done a great job describing that. You know, Connie, I'm going to have the pass the microphone over to you because we get this question out in the community about the future of the EPI and interventional procedure program. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, basically, there's a difference between electrophysiology tests that we do, and right now we're recruiting for a physician, a cardiologist that has that specialty. Also, part of EP, electrophysiology, is, like Bill said, the implant of devices, the pacemaker, the ICD. So we do the device implants. We just do not do the electrophysiology flutters and ablations. So we're trying to get our cardiologist here that actually does that procedure. As far as the interventional program, you know, for 1 year, we had locums because a couple of our interventional cardiologists that are the ones that we use to open up the vessel when it's blocked, retired, but now I think these two would agree, we have recruited and they came on board in August and September, and I think we have a wonderful group, and every day I think I have to stop by if they're in the department and thank them.
I understand your interventional program. It's just exploding.
Yes.
So I think that's terrific. People do not have to travel outside of Douglas County for those services. They can go to the Shaw Heart and Vascular Center. We have an excellent program with some excellent interventionalists. So congratulations on that. Jean, what is the EKG?
An EKG is an electrocardiogram. It actually takes the physiological signal of the heart and turns it into a tracing on paper that the doctor can read.
Okay, and does it hurt? Does the procedure hurt?
No, it doesn't hurt. We put little electrode pads on the patient's arms, chest, and legs, and it takes about 5 minutes to do, and then the little electrodes come off, and that's it.
And who wants to take, what is it exactly we're looking for on an EKG?
Well, the electrocardiogram is fascinating, and just so that you know, that the inventor of the clinical electrocardiogram, a Dutch physician, received the Nobel Prize for Medicine. And it's been around for a long time, and it's still considered a standard diagnostic procedure in cardiology. And it gives a lot of information about the heart rhythm. It also gives information about prior heart damage, and it tells whether there could be an acute problem or an acute event occurring. But there is a tremendous amount of information, and there has been a lot of scholarly development and evolution in the interpretation of the electrocardiogram. And it's just a really great skill that many internists, and particularly cardiologists and electrophysiologists, are you know, absolute experts in that sort of thing.
Okay, well, great. We're going to have to take another break, Bill. So you're listening to Talking Health on Local Talk at 4, brought to you by CHI Mercy Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to Talking Health. And if you've just joined us, we're on our last leg of the tour here, everybody. And we've got Bill Ruig, Jean Brewer, and Connie Kimmon from the Shaw Heart and Vascular Center. So they're here talking to us about a variety of procedures that are done locally here in Douglas County, and I want to stress that you do not have to go out of Douglas County for these procedures. So let's talk a little bit, you guys, about what's a stress test and what are we looking for in a stress test?
I'll take that.
Okay. Bill?
There's various kinds of stress tests. Again, that's another test that's been around a long time, almost as long as the electrocardiogram, because the very basic stress test involves some sort of a technique to increase your blood pressure and your heart rate, typically, and monitor that and see if there's any changes that develop that are suggestive of a reduced blood supply to the heart muscle. So what we're trying to do is to see if you're at a higher risk for having a blockage in one of the coronary arteries. So a lot of these non-invasive tests are for what we call risk stratification. So you might be, say, a 40-year-old male, and you have chest pain sometimes at rest, and sometimes it bothers you when you're doing your workout, and that puts you at maybe about a 40 or 50% risk of having a blockage in one of your arteries. That's not a very good place to be. That's like a coin toss. So, you know, you might have it or you might not have it. So a stress test might be ordered by a physician to help determine whether or not that's just what we call sort of just non-anginal or non-heart type chest pain, or whether it's due to a more serious problem with your heart. So a stress test classically consists of walking on a treadmill, while your electrocardiogram and your blood pressure are being monitored. And there's a certain target that you have when you have a stress test. It's based on your heart rate. So you can determine what your age predicted heart rate is just by subtracting your age from 220. So in my case, that would be maybe 170.
Okay.
All right, so don't laugh. If I was 50 years old, then it would be 170. It's that simple. And then the actual exercise target is 85% of that. And by the way, if you're doing your workout, your target would be more like about 70 or 75% of what your maximum predicted heart rate is. So that's how you kind of use that. So we use that to determine whether we're getting an adequate exercise, which will help us the cardiologist to conclude if it's a diagnostic test or not. During the test, we look to see what the blood pressure response is. The blood pressure normally will go up with exercise. If it drops, that could be a sign of a very serious heart problem. And we look to see if there's changes that occur on the electrocardiogram that might suggest reduced blood supply to the heart muscle. That's what the exercise test is. Now, sometimes that's combined with some sort of heart imaging. The heart imaging improves the overall accuracy and sensitivity of a stress test. One kind of imaging that's used is in my area, the echocardiogram can be used at rest and then immediately after the stress test exercise to look to see if there's any changes in the performance or the wall motion of the heart muscle. And that can give us other additional information other than the electrical information and the pressure information. And that's additive, and it helps to improve the accuracy to determine if there is a subtle problem with the heart. Otherwise, most of the imaging is done with nuclear imaging, and nuclear imaging is done at rest also, so there's always a baseline for comparison. And then the nuclear isotope is injected during the peak of the exercise, and it tags to the heart very quickly. So it tags during the exercise, and it tags based on the supply of blood to the heart. So you can almost think of it like a dye. So if you have an area of the heart that wasn't receiving very much blood, it's not going to get very much dye, or it's not going to get very much of this tracer, so to speak. Then they will scan your heart later on after the stress test, because what's tagged is tagged. So it's kind of, it'll persist on the heart for a good 4 hours at a good enough strength to get good diagnostic images. Then they'll compare the rest and exercise images and see whether or not there is an area that doesn't fill in with the exercise. That would indicate that that's an area of risk for a heart attack or an area that may have actually even seen some damage at that point. Other ways that we do exercise, we sometimes will use medicines for the exercise. If a patient is unable to exercise, for instance, we'll use two different kinds of medicines. One kind of medicine is an adrenaline type of medicine. It raises your heart rate. It's given intravenously. It also has effects on your blood pressure, and it sort of stimulates exercise, and it's just as accurate as that. And you can use ultrasound, echocardiographic imaging as an adjunct to that, or you can use nuclear imaging as an adjunct to that as well. Then another type, which is a common medicine used for stress testing, is something we call LexiScan now, and it's basically a vasodilator. And it works a little bit differently than the adrenaline and the exercise in that it doesn't raise your heart rate very much. But what it does is it opens up blood vessels. It opens up normal blood vessels. Abnormal blood vessels will not be affected as much by this medicine. And so it creates a situation where the good blood supply areas of the heart steal away from the bad areas. And it accentuates this area where there's a blockage to the heart. And the reason why we do this is that you can be asymptomatic for the most part, even if you have a 70 or 80% blockage to your heart. At rest, you have perfect blood supply. You're completely asymptomatic. You can't detect an abnormality. And we use stress testing to see if there's an underlying problem to bring that out because the flow is perfectly adequate in an artery that's blocked by 80% when you're resting. But when you start to stress the heart, then it becomes inadequate. And that's what we're trying to bring out. And we're trying to determine whether they need to go to the next step, which is the cardiac catheterization laboratory.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bill. So, Gene, tell me what a heart murmur is, and then, you know, what's heart bypass?
Okay, well, a heart murmur is an abnormal sound that is we listen to it with our stethoscopes. And each valve can be heard in different parts of the chest. And basically, when a person has a heart murmur, the physician will, or the cardiologist, will send them over for an echocardiogram. And then we can see the valves, we can listen to the blood flow through the valves, and that helps the doctor determine if there's a need for repairing or replacing the valve.
So, and then a bypass?
Well, it's not really called a bypass. It's either a surgically performed valve surgery, or we are now doing valves where we're going in, like in the cath lab, and putting in what we call a percutaneous valve.
And then heart stents.
Stents. Well, actually, the percutaneous heart valve is made in a stent in the for the aorta. But the stents that we were discussing earlier are coronary artery stents, and they're very small. They're about the size of a pencil lead.
Really?
Yeah. And they come in different lengths, and the doctor determines the length by what he sees in the angiogram.
So, Connie, because it is Heart Month, I want to talk a little bit about what are some of the symptoms for heart disease.
Well, of course, everybody knows that men almost always present with crushing chest pain, or somebody's sitting on my chest and I'm really short of breath and I'm really tired. Women, of course, we show symptoms differently. We may have just nausea. It feels like you have reflux. They might have neck pain, jaw pain, shoulder pain. So as usual, since it is Heart Month and Women's Go Red was last Friday, most of the time when your husband has crushing chest pain, the wife takes him in right away. Well, and they all of a sudden say, there's something wrong, take me in. Women, we do tend to try to figure it out. Oh, maybe it's nothing. Let's wait a little bit longer. But most of the new statistics that have come out are that women that are, like, I think it's over 70, have more sudden death from heart disease because they do not go in as soon as the males. I mean, Jean can tell you when she collects the data for each case, a lot of time women wait 2 days because they just don't feel right, but I'm sure it's not a heart attack because I don't have crushing chest pain. So for women, anything, if you have any of those symptoms, don't delay it. And I can tell you when I used to do stress tests, the women would come in and you have to ask them their weight and they would always apologize. Or, I'm so sorry if this test is normal that I wasted your time. And our response is, no, you didn't waste our time. You're sorting out the symptoms.
So, Connie, we've talked about a number of events, a number of procedures, but we haven't talked about cardiac rehab.
Okay.
So do you want to take that, or is that Jean's specialty? Oh, Connie, okay.
Okay, so cardiac rehab is something that we offer at Mercy. And so if you have a stent placed, that's put into your heart to open up that blocked vessel, or if you have open heart surgery, if you have valve replacement, we strongly encourage that you go and sign up for cardiac rehab because you're working with a group of nurses and respiratory therapists that see this every day and they see the symptoms post-op. You run into people that have the same procedures as you. And so it's kind of, you can compare. Do you feel this way? Yeah, I do. Oh, that's normal. No, that's not normal. So cardiac rehab, they offer up to 3 months, 3 times a week to come in. And they also have classes for lifestyle change. It's a great place to go post any of the procedures because you have the support group.
Okay. Well, guys, we're going to take our last break, so stay tuned. You've been listening to Talking Health on Talk Radio 1240 KQEN. So the message is, don't wait. You feel like you're having that pain, call 911. Right, Jean?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. This is Bill Ruick. We have Jean Brewer and Connie Kimmon herself stopped in to talk to us about the Shaw Heart and Vascular Center. If you have any questions or other heart topics that you would like to cover, my friend Kathleen Nickel is waiting for you at Mercy Community Relations at chiwest.com. She loves Facebook. She does it all day long. Please send her a message. She'd love to answer it. I want you to remember that Talking Health is brought to you by CHI Mercy Health. Please sponsor Talking Health here at KQN Local Talk at 4. So on behalf of Mercy Medical Center, remember to be kind to one another, eat healthy, exercise when you can, and have a happy, healthy week.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.